superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Show. Justin Herbert here on The Rich Eisen Show.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
To what do you attribute your success so far?
How about that connection? Get used to it. Herbert to Keenan Allen.
A great coaching staff that has helped me. I think we've done a great job of working footwork and timing.
Today's guest, host of Peacock's Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio. ESPN NFL analyst, Dan Orlovsky. Plus, from the CBS comedy, Bob Hart Zappashore. Actor Billy Gardell. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We're live on Peacock once again. Hope everybody had a happy and healthy and safe Thanksgiving weekend. We are pleased to be happy and healthy and safe and all negative here in our Rich Eisen studio, although with a positive outlook on life.
Yeah.
Chris Brockman is dressed as Poncho Cameron today, Cam Newton.
The best I could do.
As the Patriots beat the Arizona Cardinals yesterday. Beat the Cardinals. And, man, what a weekend in the NFL. I mean, holy cow. We'll talk about it with Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio in about 20 minutes' time. Mike kicks everything off on NBC Sports on Peacock, where you're watching us right now. We do say good day to everybody who's listening to us on Sirius XM 211 and the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, headlined by the mightier 1090 here in Southern California. I guess here's where we'll start, as there were so many shocking moments over the weekend, and many of them came within a span of about 4 hours, 3 or 4 hours, where the Lions bounced their head coach, Matt Patricia, and general manager, Bob Quinn, fired them. And then we found out that the county of Santa Clara County, north of us here, has essentially stopped all contact sports practices and sports. And that includes the San Francisco 49ers, who are going to have to find a new home, we assume, for the next 3 weeks. As their county of Santa Clara has stopped all contact sports activity through a few days before Christmas. That's two San Francisco 49ers home dates. And the Niners were down here. They're flying down to Los Angeles to play the Rams when they learned of the news. And then they beat the Rams with Nick Mullins. The Rams coming off of that big win against Tampa. They were the two seed for literally a hot minute in the NFC. So the 49ers had that bit of news, and then we learned more Ravens and now Steelers were testing positive, and yet that game is still going down tomorrow night as we're sitting here just after noon Eastern time, 9 a.m. Pacific here in Los Angeles. That game's still going on. And then we learned every single quarterback of the Denver Broncos was had to sit out Sunday's home date with the Saints because Jeff Driskel, their third-string quarterback, walked into a room in which every single quarterback – the Ripon kid who beat the Jets earlier this year, who got a start, and Drew Locke and Blake Bortles, all four of them having a maskless meeting indoors on an off day on Tuesday, and one of them was asymptomatic, shedding virus. All four of them had to sit. And then a kid who woke up yesterday in Denver, or 2 days ago in Denver, as a practice squad player, a month removed from working in the real world, out of football, a converted quarterback turned wide receiver, now practice squad player out of Wake Forest, Kendall Hinton, was getting a start. He didn't even get the start because Philip Lindsay took the first couple snaps at Wildcat for the Broncos against the Saints. I mean, holy cow. And then we saw the marquee game of the day yesterday. Oh, by the way, all of that made you forget just what a hot mess the Cowboys looked like on Thanksgiving. Sorry, TJ
wow.
Jefferson.
I'm you sorry. Let that slide.
Made you forget that for a second about all that. We'll get to that later on because they're win or lose for the Eagles tonight. Win or lose for the Eagles tonight. Cowboys are still in last place in the NFC East, and they were playing for first place on Thanksgiving Day. And a Washington football team beat them up after they started making one stupid decision after another. And I say that, as you know, very rarely do I use a word like that because, you know, in the crucible of the NFL, I've seen it up close and personal. You can make decisions, they're rash, but I there's only a couple of reasons to use that word in terms of, you know,
when it
stupid.
Applies.
Yeah, when it applies. But we'll get to that later on because win or lose tonight, because the Giants also won in their first three-game winning streak since their boat vacation of a playoff season in Green Bay in 2016. That's the last time that the Giants won three straight games. Cowboys will be in last place after 12 weeks before their now rescheduled Monday night game against the Baltimore Ravens in Week 13 because the Ravens can't play Tuesday and then Thursday, clearly. As the Ravens' COVID situation removed the beachfront property from NBC on Thanksgiving night, which is a Thanksgiving night Steelers game, and now the beachfront property of a Thursday night Dallas Cowboys game on Fox. But the story of the moment right here, because it was the biggest story coming into this season, as well it should have been. Here we are through 12 weeks, and they're one of only two teams, Carolina being the other, who have played every single one of those 12 weeks. No bye weeks for this team. So we've seen a full dozen games. Only two teams have given you a full dozen games to look at. Carolina, which is on a bye week this coming week in Week 13, and then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, quarterbacked by Tom Brady. Thus, the story of the entire 2020 non-playing season coming into this playing season. How will Brady look? How will he fare in his first season away from New England with all of these players that he has at his disposal of Pro Bowl quality, whether they're new to him in Godwin and Evans, or they are old reliables like Rob Gronkowski brought in, or I guess you can call him an old reliable because it was just last year where he threw him a touchdown pass and had a couple games with an Antonio Brown. And how will it all look put together? Week one looked pretty dreadful against the Saints. Saw him again against the Saints 2 months later, looked even worse. In between, a boat racing of the Green Bay Packers, who we'll talk about on this show in just a couple of seconds as well, because of how they looked against the Chicago Bears last night. Lost to the Chicago Bears on Thursday Night Football and Nick Foles. It's been inconsistent at best and disappointing at worst, because they are still 7-5. You do look at the rest of the playoff landscape as to who's sniffing it and who's currently in the National Football Conference. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are still in good standing to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to fall so far off that they're the 8th or 9th or 10th seed. They won't. So there's still that backstop that the rest of the NFC behind them is not gaining too much ground. As the Cardinals lost in New England yesterday, the Vikings pulled one out on poor Carolina, which had a chance to make Teddy Bridgewater a winner in Minnesota. The Bears lost. We know the Lions have fired their coach and general manager. I told you not to sleep on the 49ers, and they are beginning to wake up a little bit and getting healthier. Richard Sherman and Raheem Mostert coming back. But the Bucs are not falling out of the playoff race. The problem is Brady's never made it to the Super Bowl from the wild card position. And they're going to have to start playing Super Bowl quality week in and week out at some point. And there's only five games left at the end of the road. That's it. There's 7-5. There's 5 weeks. Four games left at the end of the road. That's it. Quarter of the season. And I don't know when the hell they're going to put this together. And the thing that totally threw me for a loop is how many times have I sat on NFL Game Day morning in my 10 years of hosting that pregame show on NFL Network How many times did I sit there on NFL Total Access? I've been, knock on wood if you're with me, I've been the host of NFL Network since day one, 18 seasons worth. How many times when we came on the air in 2003, which is at the outset of the back-to-back campaign for New England that made them champions 3 out of 4 years to start Brady's career, how many times were we talking about can such and such's offense keep up with Brady? Will they be able to put enough points on the board and or control the ball long enough to keep Brady on the sidelines? And now Brady's in that position with Evans and Godwin and Gronk and Antonio Brown. It is jarring to see. And it's not working. It is not working. Now, did they put some points on the board towards the end of the game? Sure they did. Will they be able to use that as momentum coming out of the bye? Who the heck knows? But the number of times that I hear from Kurt Warner, number of times that I hear from others in our business talking about how Brady does not look comfortable and is not running the offense that he's comfortable running. We had Bruce Arians on this very show 2 weeks ago and asked him. And we flat out asked him, are you, you know, what do you say to all these people in our business, including Kurt Warner, saying that your quarterback's not comfortable, not doesn't look comfortable? Do you agree with that assessment? He said, yes. And when I asked him, when do you think he'll be comfortable in it? He said, next spring. And I kind of laughed, but I think he was being somewhat serious. And he knows that, I mean, he knows he's got a set of eyes. He's a brilliant offensive coach. He hasn't forgotten. I'm genuinely concerned about this team. Genuinely concerned that they're going to be one and done, even if they do stroll into. I don't even know if they'll be fortunate enough to finish the fifth seed to be able to stroll into Dallas or Washington or the Giants. I don't think. I think they might have to go. They might have to go somewhere like Green Bay. They might have to go somewhere Seattle. Like to Seattle. Which would be finished. See ya. I think see. Because how will he go point for point with those offenses? I can't believe I'm saying that. And this is a week after Sean McVay settled for a field goal and gave the ball back to Tom Brady in that offense with 2.5 minutes to go in a game and a 3-point lead, which is something you'd never do. In the history of Tom Brady. You'd never do that. Not even the Big Ten when he was finishing up there. And he finally vanquished Drew Henson to take the gig. Honestly, I can't recall a time in Brady's career where I'm seeing this. Genuinely concerned. And Rob Ninkovich, his former player on ESPN, said he needs a new coach. And Jenna Lane in Central Florida asked Brady point blank about everything that I'm talking about and have reviewed for you here, including Ninkovich, right after yesterday's loss.
Hey, Tom, as you guys head to your bye week, there's been some folks that have had some chatter about, you know, you still look like you're running someone else's offense. One of your former teammates even said on TV that he thinks that you need a new head coach. What do you make of all that noise?
No, it's just the external noise that when you're losing, you know, that's what you deal with, so. You know, I love playing for the guys that I play with, the coaches, the whole organization's been unbelievable. And I think we just got to go out and I certainly have to do a better job the last 4 weeks of the year.
Yeah, I mean, he chose Tampa and wisely, I might add, and wisely.
What's he supposed to say?
I know, but it's a spot on analysis of what we're seeing. It's not working. It's not working.
Not working.
And the thing I asked on game day morning yesterday as well to the crew is it reminds me, all of this reminds me of the time where we were covering the Broncos when Peyton Manning got there. Do you remember there was a push-pull with Gary Kubiak who likes the quarterback under center and booting out,
right?
And running the offense off of the booting out and the play action of all that. And, you know, Peyton's kind of like, yeah, you know, that's great. I'm not 21 anymore, and I don't do that.
Right.
Okay? That's not, you know, kind of what I do. So I like being in shotgun because I like seeing everything. I don't like turning my back to the defense. I like seeing everything up front because I can pretty much figure out what the hell they're doing before they even think of doing it. Because I'm the sheriff. And from my surgically repaired neck up, nobody can beat me. That's for damn sure. And so there was that push-pull. And I guess they found the, if you will, offensive split baby in the pistol position. They put him not in shotgun, but closer to the center. I don't know what that, whatever that is for this situation, whatever that is for this situation, they got to find that in a bye week. They got to find that. If it's like, okay, instead of reading deep to short, because that's what the no risk it, no biscuit is.
Right.
Maybe it's, let's figure out how to reverse engineer it and do more of the short to deep. Again, I'm not an all 22 guy. I mentioned this on the air and everybody said it was entirely possible to figure something out. Irv said, forget about no risk it, no biscuit. He said, Brady's the biscuit. Brady's the biscuit. And they better stop risking it with him because he's getting crushed.
That's true.
And then, you know, I love Todd Bowles too. But manning up on Tyreek Hill. He had 203 receiving yards in the first quarter. Do not adjust your sets. 203 receiving yards in the first quarter. That was a wrap. How many times have you ever seen that about Tom Brady? I am genuinely concerned about them in the same way that I was not at all about Green Bay coming off their loss in Indianapolis. What did I tell you, Chris, right? I told everybody here on this show for Green Bay, R-E-L-A-X. I know, you know, he didn't win in Indianapolis, and the defense didn't, you know, kind of hold him to nothing in the second half until he, you know, Hail Mary'd his way down the field, and then they lost in overtime because Valdes-Scantling fumbled. These are mistakes. These things happen. It was an out-of-conference loss, as I said, and I said, you can come back next week and personally fork-stick the Bears, and they dropped a 40-burger on them, and everything's hunky-dory in Green Bay land right now, and they essentially have this division won. And I'll tell you what, I don't know if you saw this, Chris, but Matt Nagy's talking today. Did you see this?
No.
Okay, I'll just read to you because my buddy Andrew Siciliano is sitting on the set of NFL Network covering the live presser, and he is live tweeting it out. Nagy, about the Bears players and coaches, quote, have some personal pride, have a freaking sense of urgency, end quote, says Matt Nagy.
Jeez.
Wow. And I feel for Trubisky, who's tried so damn hard, man, but he is just not the answer there. That is for sure. And he had an opportunity in these final games to take the reins and say, this is my last stand. You did not give me that contractual backstop of picking up my fifth year. You said no. And I say, this is my team. I'm taking it over. And here we go. And I'm going to do it in front of the whole country in the longest standing rivalry, not of just this team, but the entire NFL. And he looked terrible. He looked terrible. And I know they scored points in this, you know,
doesn't matter.
In the fourth quarter. And, you know, Tony Dungy's on this in the booth saying that you can build off of this. But he also called it right when Jamal Williams ran straight up the gut of that vaunted defense into the end zone to put that 40-burger and make it official. Bears have given up. Bears have given up. I am not worried about Green Bay. Green Bay is an elite team in the NFC, and they could beat anybody. I know they lost to Tampa, but let's just see anybody have to stroll into Lambeau Field, fans or not, empty or filled or not, when it's 20 degrees out in January, and Aaron Rodgers has got full command of what's going on there. And you look at the rest of their schedule. You look at the rest of the Green Bay schedule the rest of the way. And after this one, Green Bay hosts Philadelphia, who we're going to see tonight. And I can't wait to hear about, see that, because apparently Jalen Hurts is going to get some run this evening. Then they're at Detroit against a, you know, a team with a an interim head coach. Home for Carolina. Tennessee's going to be a fun one. And then they're at Chicago when the U-Haul will be backed up in the COVID 2020 season for Chicago. And Matt Nagy will probably be, at that point, the figurative dead coach coaching. And I'll tell you what, man, they got another shot at 13-3. So the first 2 years of Matt LaFleur will be 13-3 and 13-3 for a team that we were wondering how LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers are going to work together. And Aaron Rodgers could be the MVP of this season, if not for Patrick Mahomes doing Patrick Mahomes things, like yesterday.
That was amazing.
Put it all together, and there's still so much more to talk about. I mean, we didn't even hit about Derrick Henry throwing his hat in the MVP ring again. Didn't talk about at all how the Chargers finished up in Buffalo yesterday. Have hardly talked about what we saw about the Saints and you know,
that was expected.
What happened in Denver. And there is some news out of Denver on the COVID front. And Mike Florio is going to have everything for us. Dan Orlovsky is going to join us as well from the worldwide leader in sports to talk about everything and more, including the Lions coaching situation. And the fantastic Billy Gardell of Bob Hart's Abishola, diehard Steelers fan, will be joining us on this show. You should call us at 844-204-RICH as well. Hey, football fans, are you an Amazon Prime member? Did you know that you can watch Thursday Night Football live on Prime Video? That's right. It really is the future of football because you can catch all the action on any device almost anywhere in the world. You can choose your favorite announce team, including Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, or Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah from Move the Sticks, or Chris Long and Carrie Champion from NFL Next. Get next-gen stats, too. Watch in-game replays on demand, all within Prime Video's X-Ray. Next-gen stats are real-time stats powered by AWS. No more waiting around. You can access the current stats anytime. Need to check how your fantasy player is doing? Well, this is the ideal way. Need to check how your fantasy player is doing? Well, this is the ideal way to stay up to speed. In-game on-demand replays are accessible on your remote, on Fire TV, or by turning your mobile device sideways. So, if you're a streamer or simply want the most custom way of watching Thursday Night Football, tune in live every Thursday starting October 8th. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. and kickoff is at 8:20 p.m. Eastern on Prime Video. Also available on Fox and NFL Network. NFL Network simulcast subject to change. Thursday Night Football is presented by Bud Light Platinum. Hey, everybody. The Rich Eisen Show store is open. Go to RichEisenStore.com. Be the first on your block with one of these babies. T-shirts, both long and, of course, short sleeve and white or heather gray. We've got hats. Hats, people. And, of course, start your day with a cup of Joe and a Rich Eisen Show coffee mug. Go to RichEisenStore.com and shop your head off right now. Yeah, we were sold out of masks over the weekend, but we're back.
Nice.
I got us some more masks to sell. It's Cyber Monday, everybody. Words I never thought would ever come out of my mouth. But it's Cyber Monday. Check it out, RichEisenStore.com. By the way, while you're online, I guess what is the one feature of a Bears loss this year other than the quarterback problems and us wondering if the coach and quarterback are right? What's the other one feature to every Bears loss? What do you think, Chris? Just think real hard. It involves a member of the offense.
Well, he's Allen Robinson.
That's correct. Yeah. Allen Robinson is in the news because he has liked a ton of tweets saying he should leave.
Gosh, this is parsing out the social media.
I
love it.
Bears lose. Quarterbacks look terrible. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. Bears lose, quarterbacks look terrible, and then let's turn to Allen Robinson and see what he's got to say, whether he's steaming on the sidelines or he's liking tweets as he did last night saying he should leave town because he's being lost in the shuffle. My gosh. I mean, what a weekend. As you know, I know the NFL, as I've said here all the time, it's a narrative-generating machine, a news-generating machine, and this weekend was white-hot to the touch. And as soon as I saw everything going on, I'm like, let's see if Mike Florio is free to come back on. And he's kind enough to accept our invitation. The man who kicks us off every single day here on NBC Sports on Peacock and wraps it up with Pro Football Talk Live as well as PFTPM Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Mike?
Rich, I'm doing great. Here's how crazy the weekend was. We spent 2 hours talking about Week 12 earlier today, Chris Sims and I.
Yep.
And we did not mention at any point in 120 minutes the firing of Lions coach Matt Patricia and GM Bob Quinn, or the firing of Jaguars GM Dave Caldwell.
Didn't even
mention it. Perfect news dump. The ultimate weekend to fire a coach or a GM, and it goes completely unnoticed because there's so much else going on.
There's so much else going on. Let's start with the Denver Broncos situation, and I'd love for you to clear up what many people have, I think, conflated and confused as to, you know, why would the NFL not push the game because so many quarterbacks go down? I know you know what the protocols are and what the rules that were agreed to before the season and what the latest might be. So Lay it all out for me right here, Mike. Go for it.
Well, Rich, there was a time before the season where it was believed that in certain circumstances, if a team, for example, has no healthy offensive linemen, they're all on the COVID list or otherwise injured, or no quarterbacks or some other competitive reason for postponing a game, that's when the commissioner would convene this external advisory panel that was put together as an alternative to the competition committee, because there would be conflicts of interest galore if you have current competition committee members making these decisions, that would be fair game, that games potentially would be postponed simply because, hey, we've got no healthy offensive linemen. In October, the league decided, and this was an ownership move, that that's not how it's going to work. Competitive issues will not drive these decisions. If you don't have guys ready to play, that's on you. There's enough roster flexibility this year. 53 guys on the active roster, 16 on the practice squad. You should have enough players to play. And at some level, it's your responsibility to ensure that your players stay on the right side of the virus. So for the Broncos, when Jeff Driskel tests positive, when the Broncos, and actually this falls into the no good deed goes unpunished file, the Broncos found surveillance footage from their quarterback meeting room. They saw that there was a moment, or maybe longer, but not for the entire meeting, when guys didn't have their masks up. They sent it to the league. And when they heard back from the league said they're all knocked out for tomorrow's game. And the Broncos had basically 24 hours to figure out what they were going to do. But that's how it works. And the Broncos lobbied aggressively to get the game delayed a day or two so they could get their quarterbacks back who had not tested positive, were just on this COVID-19 reserve list. The league said, no, we're not going to do it. The game is going forward. The contrast is the Ravens situation, an uncontained outbreak where the league still didn't know how deep the rabbit hole went, whether the transmissions were still happening. They weren't going to let the Ravens back into the facility. They weren't going to put them on the field until they know that it's over. And they still haven't concluded that it's over. Tuesday night's game could still get moved. But that's the difference. Competitive reasons will never postpone a game. Reasons related to an uncontained outbreak, that's when the NFL, at this point, will say we're going to slide a game back a day or two or longer.
So what is the status right now of twofold, the quarterback's room in Denver, and then that Tuesday night game, and thus the pushed Monday night game, Thursday night game to Monday for the Ravens? What's the current status of both of those situations? Mike.
Well, in Denver, it's just a matter of the procedures unfolding that would get the guys back who didn't test positive. There's the two levels of COVID-19 reserve list. You test positive, you're knocked out for at least a week, week and a half. You get put on it because you had close contact with someone who's positive. You can come back in as short as 5 days, and they should get their guys back, barring a positive test by any of them, whether it's Drew Locke or Brett Rippon or Blake Bortles. Those guys should be back. My understanding was today, possibly tomorrow, either way, in time for next week's game, Sunday night against the Kansas City Chiefs. As it relates to the Ravens, look, we went from Thursday, we went to Sunday, now we're at Tuesday. They were assembled in the facility, properly spaced, at 9:25 a.m. Eastern this morning, waiting for word from the NFL as to whether or not they could have a 9:30 a.m. walkthrough. The league said, no, can't do it. Postponed, and I saw Albert Breer reported until 5 p.m. 5 p.m. is specifically relevant, Rich, because by then the Ravens will have their daily PCR off-site testing results back. It depends on how close you are to a laboratory. The Ravens are close to a laboratory. They get theirs late afternoon, early evening. So I think the NFL wants to see, are there more positives today? And I think, and who knows, I don't want to make bad assumptions, but I assume if there's more positives today, no walkthrough. I don't know what that means about the game tomorrow night.
Wow.
But everything is still tenuous. It's still hanging in the balance. Yes, they were back in the facility last night on a voluntary basis for conditioning, but no practice yet, no green light yet to practice. And even though the game is still technically on, I sense that there's still a chance the game, based upon results of these tests today and tomorrow, the game could still end up being off.
Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show, Pro Football Talk, Pro Football Talk Live, Pro Football, PFTPM, all of it here on NBC Sports on Peacock. What's the plan if this game does get pushed, or any? Obviously, you're seeing it's getting worse in the country. I mean, December is going to be a white knuckler. December starts, as we know, Tuesday. So what's the plan for the NFL for a possible Week 18? I'm hearing about bubbles for the playoffs. What are you hearing about all that right now, Mike?
I wish they would just get into a bubble right now. And I really do think it's a matter of collective bargaining where you've got labor and management staring each other down. Management doesn't want to ask because then the union will say, what's in it for us? You have to make a concession. You're asking our players to abandon their families for the rest of the season and live in a hotel. That's a significant change to working conditions. We need something in return. The league doesn't want to give them something in return. That's how collective bargaining goes. And the union doesn't want to blink on their own and just say, well, the hell with it. We're risking losing game checks if games are lost and never played. Let's volunteer to go into a hotel. And I feel like they're just waiting for that one moment where the walls cave in and both sides say, screw it, we're going to put everybody in a hotel for the rest of the season. I'd like to think they'd come to an agreement before the walls cave in, but this may be one where the walls need to cave in, Rich. And week 18 is something the NFL has been resisting and resisting. And it kind of hit me today why they're resisting. If you would move Ravens Steelers to week 18 right now, Well, there goes the buffer for the Ravens and the Steelers. What if Bills Steelers can't be played next Sunday night? Does that game just disappear? Because obviously the Steelers can't play two games week 18. How do you decide which game takes precedence? Do you play Bills Steelers week 18 and scrap Ravens Steelers? How do you do that rock, paper, scissors analysis based upon the total number of games that would get moved to week 18? I've heard from a couple of different people there's maybe an idea that if they would ever pull that ripcord on week 18, it wouldn't just be for a game or two. It would be throw in the towel on a full week and move that week to week 18. Now, I don't know that they want to do that either, but there are some serious ripple effects of moving one game to week 18 because for the two teams involved, for every game they play the rest of the way, there is no wiggle room. And then you may end up having to decide between games that will get played, won't get played, who gets prioritized, who finishes with 15, who gets 16, and it just becomes a huge mess for the NFL. I think that's one of the big reasons why they've resisted kicking any games to a week 18.
Yeah, I know, and that's why that they're going to try and, you know, tell the Ravens, hold up, hold up until at least dinner time before you can walk through and then get on a plane tomorrow, even though apparently it's supposed to snow in Pittsburgh on Tuesday in the morning. I mean, there might actually be travel issues now on top of all of it. And then there's the issue of the 49ers. Even if they bubble up, they might not be able to bubble up in their hometown. They might be, you know, on the road essentially for the first few weeks of December right up until Christmas time. What's the status of all that right now, Mike?
Well, I was told yesterday that the 49ers wanted to today talk to the officials in Santa Clara County and see if there's any way to stick handle their way around this rule that essentially prevents them from playing at their home stadium. Can they get an exception? Is there an exemption, a dispensation, anything? If that doesn't work, Arizona looks like the place. When the schedule came out in May, one of the first things I noticed, because I knew that the California teams could have an issue, I started cross-referencing schedules. It's like, hey, Arizona's no problem. There would never be a conflict with the Cardinals. Never a game that's due to be played on the same day between the 49ers and Cardinals at home. So I think Arizona is the winner. But, you know, this issue with telling guys on a team, part of a unionized workforce, you got to go live in a hotel for the rest of the season, that's not something that the NFL just automatically gets to do. The union is going to have a say in that, and that's an issue that's going to have to be worked out pretty quickly because the 49ers have a home game, air quotes home game, next Monday night against the Buffalo Bills.
Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, I know you're a big pop culture guy, and this is a big pop culture place, so you'll follow me here. If losing your first 11 games is basically the football gods' version of ordering a code red, and and Adam Gase is Santiago, why is Santiago, despite the code red being ordered, not touched? When you see what Detroit's done, you've seen what Atlanta's done, you've seen what Houston's done. What is going on in that situation?
Well, look, there are wild cards, and we've talked about this before. And the biggest wild card, I think, is owner Woody Johnson. He's going to be back at some point. We don't know when Colonel Jessup is going to be taking the witness stand, but he will be back. And I think everything is kind of on hold for now. But one of the realities, I think, at play here, and we've heard people say, well, with the pandemic, coaching searches are going to be complicated. I think that's one of the reasons why teams are getting an early start. If you know it's going to be complicated because of the pandemic, then get rolling now. Start doing your work now. Do all your background work now and be ready to go when January rolls around. So I just don't know what's going on with the Jets. I don't know if they're holding out hope that somehow they win a few games and it justifies bringing everyone back. I don't know how Joe Douglas fits into all of this. Everyone assumes he'd be back if Gase is gone. But the reality is Douglas was sort of handpicked by Gase once Mike Maccagnan was run out of town, and Douglas is on the record saying Gase isn't the problem. So I don't think they know what they want to do. And the fact that they don't have fans present to show up wearing the bags, and we talked about this last time, I think, you know, that gives them the ability to play out the string. I assume when the string is played out, it's going to end. But with all these teams now embarking early on their searches for a new coach, every day that goes by makes it, as a practical matter, harder and harder for the Jets. So I don't know. I really don't know what's going on. I'm not sure the Jets know what's going on, and we just have to sit back and see how it all unfolds.
So then why did the Lions make their moves over the weekend, do you think?
Well, the last two games were unacceptable. That's what owner Sheila Ford Hemp said. They were embarrassed and shut out for the first time in the Matthew Stafford era by the Panthers and an XFL quarterback. And then the NFL Houston quarterback, it was the XFL Houston quarterback one week. The NFL Houston quarterback ripped them apart the next week, and that was that. And Saturday afternoon, out of the blue, although everyone was kind of expecting it, both Patricia and Quinn out. And people were surprised by Quinn. But look, Quinn was the guy who showed up fully intent on hiring Patricia, but waiting until there was an opening to fire Jim Caldwell instead of firing him right out of the gates. The problem is Caldwell made the playoffs one year. The next year he was above 500. That raises the bar for Patricia. And they never were able to win enough games to get past that ghost of Jim Caldwell. And I think that brought everyone down. And now, yet again, they hit the reset button in Detroit. And we'll see if they can find somebody who can come in and finally turn this thing around.
Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. So what are you hearing about, again, tonight's game? Doug Peterson was like, it's Wentz. If I go to Hurts, that indicates that the season's over. Then the middle of last week, there was a little bit of wiggle room suddenly created when he introduced some conditional phrasing when asked if Wentz was his quarterback, and he said, I would think so. And now Hurts, we're hearing, took some snaps with the ones over the weekend. Are we going to see Jalen Hurts significantly tonight, do you think?
I think Peterson's starting to get some heat from above. I was surprised by the report from Jeff McClain of the Philadelphia Inquirer over the weekend that last Sunday, Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the team, skipped the game in Cleveland out of frustration with the team. And I want to say to everyone connected to the organization and all the fans in Philly, you still have a Super Bowl trophy that wasn't minted all that long ago. But I just feel like for a lot of those folks, getting a taste of a championship created a sense where they want to be in contention far more often. And they're sticking with Carson Wentz, or at least they have stuck with Carson Wentz, because they are stuck with Carson Wentz at least through 2021. He's got $25 million in trade. Not even a Brock Osweiler trade is going to get that deal done, where they give somebody draft picks to get Wentz off their hands. $25 million on a cap that's likely going to be $175, and they just got to make it work. And my guess is everybody's on the hot seat next year. Get through this year as best you can. On the division, I don't know, maybe that happens this year, but the difference was Carson Wentz had it last year. He doesn't have it this year. It'll be interesting to see if they see Jalen Hurts on the field tonight and how much, whether it makes a difference, whether that wakes up Carson Wentz. I still feel like he is trying in one fell swoop to justify everything that they've done that shows faith in him, from trading up to draft him to picking him over Nick Foles to giving him the big contract. I feel like he thinks with one play, with one decision, with one moment, he can make it all right. And I just think he's trying too hard to make the Eagles look good for riding with him as long as they have. And it just feels like next year it's going to be make or break for Carson Wentz.
Well, I mean, you're more attuned to the dollars and cents than I am, Mike. You know, I'm more of a narrative, big picture guy when I do my job. So I'll ask you this. Is there any comparison where, you know, in this era, this new era, if you will, where best player out of college is becomes the highest paid player in the history of the franchise. Ever since they changed that, that we saw somebody drafted high gets paid. They do win the Super Bowl in the window in which he was on his first contract, but he wasn't the one who won it, does get paid, and then within a year regresses to the point where you're wondering if he's even viable. This is new, right? Since they changed the draft rules in terms of the contracts and who gets paid what. This is like a unicorn, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, usually with a franchise quarterback, you know early that he's going to be a franchise quarterback, and once he reaches that level, he's always there. You have it or you don't, and you don't have it and then lose it. And that's what's so weird. It's the Steve Blass all of a sudden losing his control. That takes us way back.
Good baseball
reference.
Back when
I actually cared about baseball. But that doesn't happen to quarterbacks. That's why it's always such a safe investment, relatively speaking, in comparison to other positions. You know, you pay a running back, you don't know what's going to happen. Pay a receiver, you don't know what's going to happen. Pay a defensive lineman, you don't know what's going to happen. Pay a quarterback, he's just going to keep doing what he's done. No big deal. That's what makes it so stunning. And that's why I still think that one of these days, when you consider how cheap it is to go out and reload the cannon with a first-round quarterback, one of these teams is going to say to a guy who objectively is good enough, is going to say, sorry, we're just not doing it. Sorry. And we're not going to do the franchise tag dance like Washington did with Kirk Cousins. They did that 2 years before they let him walk. Just from the moment the contract expires, we're not in this. Or go hit the market. Go see what else is out there. And then after you see what else is out there, if you want to talk, maybe we'll talk. But I expect that to happen at some point. I thought it was going to happen with Jared Goff, frankly. I thought that's the direction the Rams were moving in. And based on yesterday's game, you could say maybe they should have moved in that direction. But between Goff and Wentz, back-to-back top of the 2016 draft, they both got paid. And I think there's reason to wonder whether those contracts should have been given out to both guys, even though Goff right now clearly performing significantly better than Wentz.
Mike, appreciate the time. Enjoy tonight's game. Let's chat before the holidays. Appreciate the call, as always.
All right, Rich. Take care, buddy.
That's Mike Florio. Check him out on PFTPM, After Brother from Another. We take this network, NBC Sports on Peacock, to Brother from Another at 3 Eastern time, and then PFTPM with Mike at 5 Eastern. He starts it all off before Dan Patrick, who hands it off to us every single day on NBC Sports on Peacock. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We'll take some calls. Dan Orlovsky of ESPN will be joining us. I want to hit him on something that Mike just kind of dug up about the Lions, and then I want to also give my two cents on why the NFL is insisting this game gets played tomorrow night and what Week 18 would possibly mean if it's forced to be played. That's coming up. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com. Sadly, I've done, I think, three different versions of this promo. One for Thanksgiving night, then one over the weekend for a Sunday game. And now it's Tuesday, and we're hoping it gets played. Ravens and Steelers on Sunday Night Football. RG3 and, like, Nick Boyle and Gus Edwards and
Dez Bryant.
Yep. And I'm, you know, missing some names, but Mark Andrews and Matt Judon became the latest, along with Willie Snead. I mean, my gosh. All, again, reportedly because the strength and conditioning coach was working these guys out without a mask. And again, we don't know. We don't know specifically why. Ravens Steelers, though, being set for Tuesday night football, originally Thursday night on Thanksgiving night, and then moved to Sunday afternoon. Now we're 24 hours away from Ravens and Steelers being played. We're back here on our radio network. And the reason why the Ravens and Steelers, and they want them to play this game in the worst way, is to create a Week 18 for this one game and thus create that backstop for maybe others. If there's a one cancellation in week 14 and one in week 15 and one in week 16, just throw it into the week 18 bin. Mike Florio just hung up with us. His point was the issue is what if the week 18 bin contains two canceled games involving the same team. Well, that's an issue. And now you got to play triage as to which game is considered more important than the other. And when you're talking about tie breaks and conference records and common opponents, if you throw a common opponent out the door, what does that mean for somebody else's seeding? I mean, what a nightmare that is in terms of seeding. And then there's this. Let's just say Ravens-Steelers, Chris, gets pushed to week 18. Okay?
Okay.
So it's possible that the Steelers and Ravens are playing in week 18 while the wild card teams that were supposed to be playing in that week 18 are sitting at home on a bye. And the Steelers are 15-0 going into this game, right? And are playing for the right to have a bye the next week. Because remember, the one seed gets a bye.
Correct.
Okay. So one seed gets the bye, and the Steelers would be maybe that one seed. So they got to play in week 18. Everybody else who's supposed to be playing in week 18 sits at home and gets the bye that supposedly is only supposed to go to the one seed. Let's say the Steelers lose that and the one seed goes to the Chiefs. They're now sitting at home for two straight weeks while the Steelers are right back at it because they didn't win that game against the Ravens. Meanwhile, the entire NFC is chilling and waiting for their playoffs to start. So the one seed, let's say the Saints, they get 2 weeks off and everybody else gets 1 week off too. That throws off everything, especially if the accordion is the week off that's supposed to happen between the championship games and the Super Bowl. And what if that week players pop and suddenly you've got to push the Super Bowl back? That's why they play games when they can play them. That's why that game got played between Green Bay and San Francisco when everyone's like, hey, San Francisco, we're totally shorthanded. Why are you forcing it? Because they got it. You got to go when the medicine and the medical evaluations say go. And in terms of everybody out there, some fans were like, the NFL, it's totally willy-nilly on when to go and when not. They're doing the best contact tracing. Do you think the NFL are experts in public health and epidemiology? I mean, they're hiring the right people. I mean, Dr. Sills is doing the best he can do here. And the contact tracing that so many fans are critical about, I bet a good part of them, sorry to say, would be absolutely livid if they were forced to have that contact tracing placed on them in their professional lives for liberty issues and all that business. So they're doing our best, and we'll see what happens. But that's the reason why they're kind of pulling their punches, if you will, on that Tuesday night game. They don't want to create week 18 if they don't have to. And if the Ravens are completely shorthanded going against the Steelers tomorrow night, and it might not look good, and it might look as ugly as Saints and Broncos, unfortunately, those are some of the eggs to make this omelet this year that need to be broken. And I don't want to hear about asterisks anymore about championships. Could you imagine if the Steelers go undefeated with all of this, where their bye week goes from week whatever it was to week four, and then they play all these games in a row, but then they get a bye week because a week 18's been forced where they have to play that game because they don't know where they're going to be seated. The same thing with the 49ers. Now then, I can take some heat, all right? I can take heat. I've been in this business long enough, I can take some heat. I took some heat over the weekend. Did I take some heat over the weekend when the Lions fired Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, and I retweeted the statement from the Lions essentially saying, hire Jim Caldwell back. Find a GM he's comfortable with and go to work. That's what I tweeted out. And boy, did I get a whole bunch of, I mean, to say grief from people I know. My brother-in-law lit me up on text calling it one of the worst takes I've ever had. And some guy who's got, you know, Isaac from the Love Boat is his Twitter avatar.
World of Isaac.
Yeah. Okay. He's got a sizable, whoever that person is, got a sizable following.
Big Lions fan.
Saying, what a horrible take for somebody who knows football. Hire Jim Caldwell back, choose a GM who knows him and go to work. Jim Caldwell, in the morass of the last 20 years of the Lions, took them to the playoffs twice. We all know they got hosed on that pass interference call in Dallas, right? Hosed, totally hosed come on. You even know that should have been to the Lions' benefit in that game.
No idea what you're talking about.
Matthew Stafford back in his home state, right? They had the Cowboys dead to rights in that game until that horrible call.
What was this?
Please stop. Took him to the playoffs 2 years out of his four. He was 8 games above 500. I'm like, you could do a lot worse. And responses were like, well, you're supposed to do more than just not a lot worse. You're supposed to win it all. And also, I don't know if this is accurate or not. The numbers I got sent back to me, he was 4-25 against teams that were not winning teams. I mean, that were winning teams. He was 4-25 against teams above 500. Oof. It's a terrible record. But look at the Lions, the desert that they've been looking for an oasis or a drink of water in. So I just threw that out there. And you could call him a retread or whatever, or somebody that's never really done it before. You know who was that way when they hired him? I swear to you, Joe Torre was that way. Remember when the Yankees hired Joe Torre? Oh. They bounced Buck Showalter? And it's just like, what are you doing? He's a total retread. Mm-hmm. Now, the Lions don't have the version of Jeter and Pettit and Rivera and so on and so forth and Posadas sitting right there.
True.
Dan Orlovsky is going to join us in the next hour because he apparently has been a Caldwell stan. Is that something you could possibly say? Is he standing for Jim Caldwell?
Very, very niche group.
Very niche group. Very small group.
That works there.
Very niche group.
Speaking of niche, in that analogy I made with Mike Florio about Adam Gase's Santiago and 0-11 is the code red being ordered by the football gods, and why isn't Santiago being touched? I would be the Lieutenant Weinberg in that.
Nice.
But you know what I mean? Like, he was on the Lions team when Caldwell was there. Jeff in Detroit, let's get his phone call. What do you think, Jeff? Am I nuts?
Listen, you are right. You're pretty much on the money. I mean, you got to think about this. In order for Matt Patricia to even equal Jim Caldwell's record, he would have to win 24 straight games. And in a locker room, you have to have your players. You have to make sure that they're with you. You can't go in and just demand that they respect you. You got to earn their respect. And Jim Caldwell had that in space. They will go out and down the field. And we see what happens when you play for a coach that you really want to play for. Pete Carroll, Andy Reid, those guys, they get out on the field and you can see the determination in their players. It's no question that they're playing for the coach. And Jim Caldwell coming back to Detroit for a second round, weirder things have happened, crazier things have happened. You're talking to somebody who hasn't won a playoff game in 20 years, 20 plus years. I mean, what? Come on now. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I had a question for you.
Yep.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Go for it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had a pretty good question for you. If you were on vacation and you're just coming back, which fact would you just find utterly ridiculous? The fact that the Giants are first in the NFC East or the Ravens are third in the AFC North?
Well, I would say the Giants first in the NFC East. Certainly, when you would then show me the actual standings, and I'm like, that's actually real, huh? So, and I appreciate the call, Jeff. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving, other than watching your Lions.
Thanks, Jeff.
Again, that's my point. Again, is that I know you go with the hot coordinator. I know you pluck somebody off of somebody else's coaching tree. I think they're going to go and get Robert Saleh, who has gotten a huge head of steam for the last 2 years and how he has coached the 49ers defense. Richard Sherman was very vocal about Saleh deserving this shot just yesterday. And he's also from Dearborn, Michigan. I think that makes total sense if you do all that and you bring somebody. But I just threw that out there. Like, it's not a bad idea. I don't think it's a bad, but the amount of people, it's terrible. You know, firing Caldwell was right just as hiring Patricia was wrong. And, you know, Matt Patricia was so kind to this show as well as my Run Rich Run. So I have a different opinion of Matt Patricia than many others in Detroit might have. But Patricia's firing gives much more credence to Mike Del Tufo's thoughts on Bill Belichick's coaching tree.
Very true.
Nick Saban on the tree, Mike. Never forget that.
Yeah, he's got one guy.
I got the best guy. That's all I need.
He's got one guy. By the way, it's not a bad guy.
I mean, how good was he in the NFL?
844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Dan Orlovsky of ESPN, our Overreaction Monday, and your phone calls coming up in hour number two on the radio. We are still here on Peacock, though.
Jim Caldwell got kind of hosed as a head coach.
Well, again, the point was he was 4-25. Okay, one time I guess they had 9 men on defense and it was terrible. It was a big game. I don't remember which game it was in. I mean, that's honestly the torrent of you don't know what you're talking about. You're horrible. You're terrible. That I got. It was like there was 9. Tell it to the 9 men on defense. Tell it to the 4. You know. The 4 above 500 teams he beat in 29 shots. You know, tell it walking.
Not a lot of coaches get fired, though, after back-to-back 9-7 seasons.
By an organization that had been
terrible. Doesn't ever win. Yeah. Got one losing season. He was 7-9.
He was 8 games over 500 in 4 years. Trust me, I remember because I don't know this stuff off the top of my head. I looked it up before I tweeted it out.
Yeah, of course.
Just wanted to make sure that I made some sense because I know all the players on those teams were like, I love this guy. Colts fans. I mean, Colts players love this guy. And sometimes you just need that calm, cool, even hand with a good coaching staff and you win some football games.
Well, that was kind of the joke, the faces of Jim Caldwell. And they were all the same. But
I know that.
Guy won games.
I know that. That's why I pointed it out. And I like being right. And I normally do like Isaac the bartender, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Welcome to the MIP.
Yeah!
The Michael Irvin Podcast.
You knew this was coming.
Guess who?
Let me start this thing off. Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.